Welcome back to another episode of our Eagle Perspective podcast. I'm Mike Siciliano. I have the honor of being joined today by renowned speaker, author, professor, teacher, general awesome guy, as I found out so far today, Sean McDowell. Sean, thank you for being here.
And Julian High School graduate.
That's right.
We played Santa Fe back in the 90s. Brings back a lot of fun memories.
I don't mean any insult by this, but I think you predate me by a couple years.
So I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, right. You have a little bit more wisdom than me. Mm-hmm. So what year did you graduate from Julian?
Julian was 1994.
Okay. All right. So I played at Santa Fe in the late 90s. We did play Julian, but I don't think we would have found ourselves squaring off. But you did mention some great athletic names of Santa Fe's past this morning with our teachers that you actually remember playing games against.
I do. Yeah, I remember Coach Jeff Reinke.
Yep.
I went to a camp with him. He invited me.
Okay.
And I thought he was a fantastic coach, great person, kind of coach I wanted to play for.
Yep, I got to play for him. You know, he also taught in our Bible department, actually.
You know what? I remember that.
Yeah.
I sat in one of his classes. He was teaching, was it Esther or was it Ruth?
Oh,
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff, if you're listening, but I visited campus and have been here a number of times, had a lot of friends come to Santa Fe. Yeah. So
great Bible teacher. In fact, he's still over at North Coast Calvary Chapel doing marriage and family counseling, which is where a lot of our families go. Mm. So now, who won those games?
Well, my senior year, we at Julian won both.
Wow. Okay, so that was a down year for us, is what you're saying.
No, you guys had a really good team.
If we lost twice.
Really good that year.
And then you've been to our campus several other times. In fact, I know we just retired. Steve Strimple was here today to come see you.
Yeah.
But when you were starting to teach high school, I think you came and visited with him. Is that correct?
I came. Gosh, it must have been about. Well, it was my first year I taught, so it was 03-04.
Okay.
And I was a new Bible teacher, didn't have a clue what I was doing. So I decided to come down. I think maybe I did teach in a chapel. Somehow I was invited to teach in chapel. And I thought, well, I'm here. I'm going to spend the day sitting in Bible classes. So I met Steve. I didn't know him before that. But Paul Lyons was teaching. His daughter roomed with my sister at Biola. And then his daughter's actually coached my daughter at CVCS in volleyball since.
Yeah.
So known him for years. And I decided I'm going to sit in Yoda's class because he's that kind of teacher.
Yep.
I remember he was teaching on Revelation 21 distinctly, talking about heaven and the nature of it. And like he was so passionate. I was like, that's the kind of Bible teacher I want to be. So I've been back a handful of times since, but it's a treat to be here.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, it's really a treat for us. And you mentioned CVCS. So just to share a little bit more about yourself, you've written how many books?
Written or edited around 20.
Okay. All right. I would have thought it would have been more.
I'm just
kidding. You know, you said sarcasm. Zero.
Okay, all right.
You said sarcasm was your love language.
It is.
I think you called it the sixth love language, and the people who know me know it's definitely mine too.
Good.
I'm going to lean into it.
Do it. Know. Game on.
Do you have a favorite of the 20?
So that's like not fully fair comparison, but asking what's your favorite kid.
Yeah.
In the sense
but let's be honest. Maybe sometimes you have one. Just if my kids are watching, I don't. But I've heard other people.
Other people might. Yeah. I love that. So it's hard because my dissertation, I spent 3 years studying the deaths of the apostles. And then I just finished a 10-year update where I've been studying it for a decade, published a second one. So that like so much blood and sweat and academic tears. And it was a unique contribution in its field. I love that book. I've updated a couple books with my dad, some of his best-selling books, Evidence and Demands, Verdict, and More Than a Carpenter.
Yeah,
I think Evidence is, I don't know, over 4 million. More Than a Carpenter has been published in 30 million copies worldwide. So to update those with him was pretty special to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And
so those would be up there too.
Not to go back to our ties, but I'm pretty sure I first read that book in Steve Strimple's Bible class.
Oh,
my
good.
My freshman year, More Than a
Carpenter. I love it. My respect for him has even gone up.
Yeah, good. There's was it Lord Liar or Lunatic? That chapter still stuck out in my mind.
Now, C.S. Lewis, it actually was earlier than C.S. Lewis, but my dad did have a chapter on that popular argument and expanded it a little bit.
Yeah,
That's right. Good memory.
Yeah, hey.
For an old guy.
But not quite as old. Although I, since I've done zero books, you know, I think that takes some away. Okay, and then you mentioned CVCS, that's Capistrano Valley Christian School.
Yep.
And you've taught there for a long time. 15 years, I guess, since 03, well, until recently.
Yeah, so 03 to 2013, I taught full-time, was a Bible department chair, and then got offered a job at Biola, started 2014, and continued to teach one or two classes at CVCS part-time. Yeah. Kids were there, love Christian education. This is actually the first year I'm not teaching a class. So for 21 years, full-time or part-time, been in a private Christian school.
Yeah. Okay. So it's fair to say you've spent a lot of time with Gen Z.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Which brings us to really our main topic here. And I got to hear you share with our staff. You're speaking also with pretty much every constituency that we have here over a couple day period. But I think for a lot of people who listen and watch us, you know, there are so many questions about Gen Z, how different it is, how as parents or as educators, you know, what do we do to reach these people for Jesus and to reach them academically and all the things. But I think you said something today I'd love to hear you expand on about we're so focused on the differences between generations. Mm. But maybe that's not the best place to start.
Well, first off, before we kicked off this interview, you were like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not really host. You're killing it. You're keeping the conversation going, asking good questions. Don't sell yourself short.
I appreciate that.
Just for the record. Well, now, I don't know if that translates to the basketball court or not, but certainly doing a good job as a host right here.
Thank you, especially because I feel like I've limited my insults to you to one, which is really, I will say I'm a much better podcast host than I am a basketball player, which all of my basketball teammates will tell you. So
fair enough. Was Jeff your coach, by the way, in the late 90s?
He was my coach for 2 years, and then and then he ended up retiring from coaching. So
love it. That's cool. You got to play for him.
So
when we talk about Gen Z, demographers will assess this differently. Some will say born 95, some born 97. It's not like you have a real cutoff. These are estimates. Roughly, Gen Zers are like those 13 to mid to upper 20s, like junior high into those out of college entering the workplace is roughly who we would call Gen Z. The first studies are coming out now of the generation after Gen Z, which has been dubbed Gen Alpha. Mm-hmm. Like we ran out of the alphabet, so let's start over with the Greek alphabet. That's kind of a placeholder for now, so we'll see what name emerges and takes hold.
Mm-hmm. Like the millennials were at one point Gen Y for a little bit.
Yeah, they were. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. They were Gen Y. There were a few other names for millennials I'd have to think about, but you're right. So Gen Z... Again, like 13 to like upper 20s. One of the ethics that's pushed on this generation is intersectionality. Whether it's by that term or not, it's part of kind of tied to what's called critical theory that sees the world through the lens of the oppressors and those who are oppressed. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a narrative in our culture we see all over the place. And a piece of that is to divide people up into whether they are oppressed or whether they are an oppressor. And the class of oppressors would be of the religions, it'd be Christian. Of your gender, it'd be male. Of your class, it'd be rich. Of your race, it'd be white. What am I missing? Those who are heterosexual as opposed to homosexual. So I actually tell my students at Bio when I teach a class, I say, if you want to know who the ultimate oppressor is, you're looking at them. I actually cross every T and dot every I of the oppressor class as it's understood by this narrative.
As you describe it, I'm right there with you.
We are in this boat together. Yeah. I live in Sun Orange County. You live in Santa Fe, beautiful area. So we're not rich, but compared to the world, we're doing fine.
Yeah.
So I'll say to my students, so if I don't strike you as the ultimate oppressor, maybe something's wrong with the narrative. So the reason when I talk about Gen Z is, I emphasize your point, is that many people approach this and say, well, if you're black and I'm white, I can't even understand you. If you're female and I'm male, I can't even understand you. If you're rich and I'm poor, it's like we other people where we emphasize all the differences and we lose that we have more in common than we do differences because of our shared humanity.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to look at Gen Z and think, oh my goodness, they have different words and they have crazy words my son uses. I'm like, what exactly does that mean? They maybe dress differently. They talk differently. But a lot of those things are surface. We have far more in common with this generation than we do differences. That's what we need to lean into.
Yeah, and a couple things on that. And one, and I'm curious if you agree, it doesn't mean that those other things don't have any impact on our experience, right? Whether it's race, gender,
exactly.
Whatever. It's not saying those things don't matter. It's just saying it doesn't overcome all the similarity we have that's more important than what binds us together. And that's the way we should look at those things and look at how we approach this generation.
100%. I think that's well said. So obviously, there's certain perspectives. I'll have conversations with my wife, and I'll say, okay, as a woman, how do you see this?
Yeah.
And she'll see certain things that I might not see
yeah.
because she's a woman. I actually had, interestingly enough, on my dissertation, I studied the death of the apostles. And a woman asked me, she said, so did Mary have to watch both of her sons, both Jesus and James, get martyred?
Wow.
And I thought, I've studied this for 10 years.
Yeah.
I've never even thought about
right.
that.
But mom would.
A mom you know? Would. Yeah. So of course, our race sometimes leads to navigating the culture differently, our age, our class. But what happens in intersectionality is there's a certain level of authority that's given where you are right because
right.
you're a woman. You are yeah. right because you're a certain race or not a certain race. And you're wrong because of this. It goes further than saying we might experience the world differently and bring insights to a level of authority because of those characteristics. That's where I say time out. I think we've taken this too far.
Right. And so to come back to the generational thing, it's easy for us to pick at Gen Z and all their flaws and all their challenges and ignore the fact that they're humans going through, you know, things like our generations all did when people thought our generations were crazy. And, you know, it's just different things. Now, to that point, now that we've talked about how we're mostly similar, I'd love to ask you, what are some of the things about Gen Z that you've noticed?
Sure. So there's a lot of studies that have come out now, and we're just seeing the first studies come out of Gen Alpha. But if you read the different studies, maybe 8 or 10 or 12 kind of common themes bubble to the surface for the most part. The obvious one that really shapes everything is that Gen Z is the first digitally native generation. So I'm a Gen Xer, and same with millennials. You might be considered a digital immigrant. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like the internet and smartphones and social media have developed through our lifetime, and we learn how to use those as tools. But a lot in this generation who are born in 2007, that's like when around the time YouTube and Facebook and social media is starting, a majority of culture got smartphones in 2012.
Yeah.
So this is a generation in many ways. They've been swiping smartphones before and iPads before they could talk, before they could read. So Tim Elmore, this is a quote I used in our chapel earlier today. He's like, teens put technology in the category of air and water. They take it for granted and can't imagine a world without it. And that's not to blame them. It's anybody just, who's yeah. raised in this era. We all have certain kinds of technology, right? A old telephone is a kind of technology. Pencil and paper is a kind yeah. of technology. So we all take the technology of the era we're raised into for granted. But there's been this radical shift where you can be connected to anybody, anytime, anywhere with social media and smartphones. As this generation was raised, I think in the history of the world, that's about as significant of a technological shift as we have seen.
Yeah. You said this morning with our staff, I loved the way you put it. You know, you and I learned how to communicate, or were natural at communicating in person. We had to learn how to do it online. Kids today, their natural mode is communicating online, and they have to learn how to do it in person, which really connected with what I see in teenagers. And in fact, even like we have a thing we've started called Freshman Seminar, which we talk about things like, okay, so you're in a conflict. You know, what do you do? Because what your instinct is just to run away, never deal with it, or snipe at each other online, right? And we have to walk them through, like, here's some strategies of what you might say to the person, which I think just kind of hits at that idea of things that ways of communicating we took for granted. You know, we have to actually be intentional about teaching kids. There were a couple other things that you mentioned today about Gen Z in addition to the technology piece.
So let me comment on that, because I'm so glad to hear you have those seminars. The kinds of conflict kids will have has not changed.
Yeah.
But the medium by which they experience those conflicts has changed.
Yeah.
There's always been bullying. There's always been making fun of. There's always been a fear of being left out. There's always been a need to find my identity in something. All those things are universal. But it shifted now with commenting. It shifted with social media. Yeah. It shifted with the technology that we had. And so I just want to encourage parents, like, these are the same needs and desires we've always had. But how do we navigate when it comes to technology? So things like take a breath first.
Yeah.
Don't comment when you're angry. It's just like your mom said, don't shop when you're hungry. Bad idea. Don't comment when you're angry. Just yesterday, I posted a video and someone sent me an email. They're really upset about it. You need to take this video down and criticize me. And at first, like, my heart sank. I'm like, okay, think about this before I respond. I got some counsel from some people. I slept on, actually didn't sleep great, to be completely honest. But I woke up, got some process. I'm like, you know what? If I had just responded in that moment, it would have been unwise. And I think I would have regretted it.
Yeah.
Now I have some perspective. Like, these are just tools we've always needed, but they're instant and they're urgent on social media. That's really what shifted.
Yeah, the consequences are so much different too. And
that's true.
not to belabor this point, but I get parents a lot who ask about, you know, all the anxiety. And I think it really hits on this. When I was a kid or a teenager, we'd get into a fight. You and I would get into an argument at school.
On the basketball court.
Sure, right? You know, you were probably being a punk to me or something, you know. And Julian guys, you know.
Right? That's exactly. I'm glad you got that message.
Yeah, for sure. Although we'd love to have more Julian students here if you live in Julian. But
too late.
So we'd get in a fight. And, like, you know, after school, we might talk about it with our buddies, but then I'd go home.
Yep.
And I had all this space. I'd go through this cycle of being angry to realizing I'm really hurt to thinking through, okay, I'm going to see him tomorrow. What are my options? What am I going to do? I might call one friend on the phone and kind of talk it through. And then I would go to bed thinking about it. And I'd show up the next day with, like, a plan. You know, and having had some of that space you just talked about of, like, okay, I'm feeling differently about it. I'm glad. Now the fight doesn't stop.
That's right.
I mean, we're still texting. Our friends are posting or texting us. Hey, did you hear he told so-and-so, so-and-so? Hey, what are you going to do? I think you ought to this. There is no space to go through that at all. And so I'm curious your take, but, you know, we talk about anxiety and sure, is it an overused word? You know, not all stress is anxiety, but a lot of that is real because there is so much more digital input all the time. Like, you don't have that space to reflect on anything. It just follows you.
I think two things are going on, and I don't know exactly how to weigh this. Number one is, I think this is, who's the recent author of the book, Bad Therapy?
Yes.
Where
Yep.
She also wrote Irreversible Damage, Abigail Schreier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very popular book.
And she's like,
right now,
there's something cool about having some kind of mental health issue. Like, in the past, the peer pressure was suck it up, you're fine, probably too far that direction.
Yeah.
Now it's like we lean into, this is a part of who I am, and I get an excuse and we become too soft, arguably. Mm-hmm. There's a dance between kind of the two of those that we don't always perfectly nail down. So that's some of it. If you think you're an anxious generation and you think you're a lonely generation, you're going to find things that reinforce that. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if you're told you're anxious all the time. Ah, I'm anxious.
Yeah.
So some of our rhetoric and our narrative about this doesn't actually help. But with that said, you're right. Worst case scenario, it's like, okay, this is so bad. I'm going to another private school. Or I'm going to public school. Escape my problems. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. That footprint goes with you everywhere, which is back to your point that more is at stake.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think for kids, I mean, the bottom line is when you really look at kids who are emotionally healthy, it's the level of intimate relationships, primarily with their parents.
Yeah.
Tech-free space, tech-free time, and just healthy relationships. If you want to know if somebody's healthy in life, look at the quality of their relationships. That is the biggest indicator, period. Parents, friends, in the classroom, how are somebody's relationships? And so if my relationships aren't healthy, then all of these other things in my life bring more anxiety, bring more stress, because there's not that security and identity rooted in what God says about me and rooted in the people around me that know me and love me.
Well, gosh, we are kind of on a roll here. Do you mind sticking around if we finish this one up and we'll do a second episode if you got another 20 minutes or so?
I'd be happy to. That'd be fun.
Okay, thank you so much. Stick around. Come check us out for part two or any of our other episodes of our Eagle Perspective podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, or elsewhere podcasts are available. And you can always see our video podcasts on YouTube. We look forward to seeing you again soon.